wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. It's Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. There you go. She does it much better than I did for the first 15 years. We love the Iron Lady. She sings it well. Thanks for tuning in to my audience and friends, neighbors, relatives, all the people who come to the show. The Chris Voss Show is the family that loves you but doesn't judge you, at least not as harshly as your mother-in-law, because she never liked you anyway. But refer her and her family to the show, The Chris Voss Show, at goodreads.com, Fortress Chris Voss, linkedin.com, Fortress Chris Voss, Chris Voss 1, and Chris Voss on the tickety-tockety, and Chris Voss Facebook.com. And we'll try and make her laugh, and maybe, you know, she'll put you in her will someday. We have an amazing author on the show. He's going to be talking to us about his newest book. It's entitled Red Helicopter, A Parable for Our Times. Lead Change with Kindness, plus a little math. Comes out April 9th, 2024. James Ree is going to join us on the show with us today. He'll be talking to him about his insights, his story of his life and journey, and lessons that you can lose. Lessons that you can lose, yeah, so that you're not a loser in life. And you actually, I was trying to segue into something and it didn't work. I dyslexia. He's going to give you the stories of his life. You know, turn out to be a loser because he's done pretty well. James Ree is an acclaimed impact investor, founder, CEO. It's Monday, right?
No, I love
it's
it.
Wednesday.
Yes, Wednesday. Whatever.
I need some testosterone over here. Founder, CEO, goodwill strategist, thought leader, and educator. He is who empowers people, brands, and organizations by marrying capital with purpose. He bridges the emotional with the mathematical and gives permission for us to be human. A longtime private equity investor, James also serves as a founding member of J.P. Morgan Chase's Advancing Black Pathways, a charter member of Ashoka's Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur Network, and a former chair of the Innovative Committee of the National Retail Federation. In addition to his private sector endeavors, he teaches at Howard University and MIT Sloan School of Management and Duke School of Law. Now he's on the Chris Voss Show. Welcome to the show, James. How are you?
Hey, Chris. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you as well, if I can figure out what day it is. So give us a .com. So where do you want people to find you on the interwebs?
Redhelicopter.com. It's easy.
There you go. You were able to get that? Seriously?
Wow. Totally.
So give us a 30,000 overview. What's inside the new book?
What's it about? Well, I think it's three stories combined into one piece of music. Number one, it's a simple story about son and parents, mm-hmm, trying to understand mom and dad. We all do. Number two, son meets a group of friends, unlikely group of friends that on the surface of it has nothing in common with him. Mm-hmm. Realizes that has a lot more in common, particularly with his mom. And then these friends help him really understand mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I think number three, when you sort of weave that all together, it's all based on a business story at the same time. It's a story of what was a pretty remarkable transformation of a company. And hopefully will give us insights about, you know, where maybe our business world and our country could be going. In a year that's pretty fraught with a little too much madness. Maybe we need a little bit more joy and friendship.
Definitely. We definitely need more of that. I'm kind of over all the weirdness over the past. Well, seems like it's been going on for a while. Yeah. COVID wasn't cool either. So no. I'm totally against that thing. No more pandemics for a while. Can we wait another 100 years for that one? The book is entitled A Parable for Our Time. So you structure the story, I guess, as a parable, as it were. Mm-hmm. Do I have that correct?
It is. It's actually structured as a piece of music.
Really?
Yeah, there are three acts. Mm-hmm. Act one, act two, act three. There's a bridge. There's a prelude and a coda. And it may not seem like this. It may not come across in the bio, but I tend to interface with people like almost as a musician. I hear I hear sounds. I hear people's timbre and like I hear their pitch and it's kind of how I think about the world through music.
There you go. Is it anything like Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin? No, I'm just kidding.
It is.
It is? Really? Okay, well, there you go.
It is.
And she's buying the red helicopter. Let's see. Now, the other thing is you said plus a little math. Is that the musical science part of it?
Yeah, you know, like it's, you know, people, when I say kindness and math, you know, it challenges people to say, to pause and say, what? What's kindness have to do with math? They seem so opposite. And I think just like the story being three stories, it's by the end of the book, people reconcile what kindness really is, and how it's actually quite related to math. And when you sort of weave those two things together, a third thing crops up and it feels good and it's sort of truthful.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the red helicopter, can you tease us out on what the red helicopter is, or is it like people need to read the book if they want to find out?
No, I can tell you the story. I mean, for me, like for everyone, it's a metaphor. It's a it's a symbol and a story of when you were laser clear, not overthinking things, just it was just intuitively true. And so for me, literally, it was a red helicopter. You know, when I was really little in kindergarten, I came home from school with a toy red helicopter that it was a chain of misunderstandings. Like at first, my parents thought I had taken it from school. And then they thought that maybe they had screwed up because they didn't know in America, everyone, they thought I was supposed to give gifts to my kindergarten friends. And I said, Mom, I'm the only one who got one. Then they got sort of annoyed at me when I didn't know why this family came in to give it to me. And it turned out I got it because I've been sharing my mom's like meticulously made lunch every morning with my best friend.
Oh.
Because he came to school often without any, and I didn't know why. I just knew my buddy didn't have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know that his mom had died that summer.
Oh, wow.
And so the dad had come in with a couple of his brothers and just wanted to, he basically patted me on the head and said, he didn't make a big deal of it. He did that. And anyway, my parents explained it to me. And, you know, I was like, as a five-year-old, I was obviously, it felt good, but I was kind of like, he didn't have any. Why wouldn't I share my lunch with him?
Yeah.
And as you get older, as we all get older, we tend to mistake, I don't know, like education or ego for truth. And, you know, I've always clung to that story because it was me being, it was right.
There you go.
You know?
And easily misunderstood and people not understanding the meaning and not wanting to maybe learn more, maybe. I don't know. So is the story a parable based on your life?
It's a parable because the characters in the book are, it's everyone.
Okay.
You know? And even though it's specifically tied to like my story or the story of these new friends, the story of my parents, it's written in a not prescriptive way. Like a lot of parables, like Aesop's fables or things like these, they let the reader come to the conclusions. There's no lists. You know, a lot of books these days have, here are the five things you have to do to not suck, right? Here are the 10 things to do that you don't suck. Mm-hmm. And I'm not writing it that way. I'm saying, listen, I don't think you suck. I think you know a lot of the answers that you already know them. I'm giving you permission to sort of rethink a lot of the things that you think are intuitively right, but maybe people are telling you you're wrong. And I'm saying, no, you're good. And I write the story that way. And I think that, look, I'm a former high school teacher too. I think good teaching, it allows the reader / student to come to their own conclusions versus forcing it down their throat.
There you go. I like that. Plus, I never do the five things, so I just assume that I always suck.
Or you read the five things and say, no, thank you. I don't feel like doing those five things.
I always feel guilty. I'm like, I don't know. I watch that YouTube video that says, do these 10 things and you won't suck. And I'm like, I'll get back to it later. I'll just keep sucking.
I'm asleep on number three, right? I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your journey through life and what got you to the point, and then finally what motivated you to write the book. Tell us about how you grew up with some of the influences you had and kind of some of the journey you went on.
Yeah, look, I'm a public school kid, Long Island. You know, grew up playing baseball on our neighborhood street every day. Loved the New York Mets. Really liked Steve Garvey. That was my guy when I was at the Dodgers. Yeah, I loved him. Number six, played first base, wore his number. Mm-hmm. and you know, just was kind of friend to all, whatever, pretty happy kid. First family member to be born in this country. Parents had immigrated. Mom and dad, mom was nurse, dad was pediatrician. So grew up in a family that really took care of people. Like, it was really important in our family that you take care of people. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of in my genetics, which is why after I sort of went off to college, you know, I taught high school for 12 grand a year. I mean, it was, I always kind of do things and then I learn it. And then I'm like, why do people make this so complicated for other people? So I'll do something and then I'll teach it back. And so that's what I do. And then after that, I thought I went to law school. I thought I was going to be a public defender. Remember the whole service thing?
Yeah.
But I was drowning in school debt. I had a lot of school debt and it was suffocating. And so I made this crazy pivot in the early days of private equity. Had no idea what it was. Mm-hmm. Get it. And still do it, but didn't grow up with money. And so learned money. And I'm like, oh. And then you realize, oh, money is a tool. And there are an awful lot of people who view it as an end goal and they're kind of miserable for it. So I'm like, okay, I know how to make money, but maybe there's a way for me to combine all this stuff, be a teacher, public defender, and a capitalist at the same time. So I've spent a lot of my time making money in a way that benefits lots of people.
There you go.
And if I do that well, then I should get a cut of that pie, right? Mm-hmm. But that's generally my background, heart of a high school teacher, but I know how to make money, and that's it.
There you go. And here you are. So what was there something that was the proponent to make you want to publish the book and write the book out? Was there something that said, hey, you know, it's time to share this maybe?
Yeah, my mom died.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, the business story in the book was I did something kind of nuts, right? I don't know if your listeners can see my face. For those of you who can't, I'm a dude. I've got a Korean face, okay? And I'm wearing like a red hoodie. And sort of living the life in Boston, you know, and I left. I left that life for almost my entire 40s. I became the unlikely CEO of a business that was very important for plus-size black women. Mm-hmm. And it was about to go away, and these women reminded me of my mom. I mean, just a lot of things were going. My dad was dying, and I was thinking about a lot of things of how I grew up and how I had sort of gotten away a bit, I think, from the public school kid who wanted to teach high school. Mm-hmm. And so I left that life, and so we had a lot of success, I think. The way we did it was really successful, actually. It invited a lot of people in. We made a lot of friends. So anyway, so then toward the tail end of that, it was supposed to be 6 months. It ended up being 7 years of me doing that. My mom died. And I lost her in 3 to 4 weeks. She was, for I think a lot of people, like a lot of sons, you know, she was the most important person in my life. And I took a step back and took some time off just to think about everything we had done, think more in my mother. And then I wanted to write this book for my parents, but in this book, the protagonist, it's my mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's me understanding at the very end that of how freaking strong she really was. And yeah, it was my mom.
There you go. There you go. One thing you talk about in the book is a helicopter can fly in 6 different directions, up, down, left, right, forward and backward. Mm-hmm. Can you tease out a little bit about how that applies to what you're talking to people about in the book?
Yeah, the book is a story about emotional and financial agility. And I think for those of us who've played sports, in order to have agility, you have to have balance. If you're off balance, you can't be agile. And so that's the sort of philosophical point of the book, is sort of giving people agency, which requires you to understand certain things about money and life and your brain and friendships, and that will give you balance. And then once you have that balance, you can be agile. And so the helicopter, in addition to it being a toy that I got that reminds me of what's important, what's the truth, you know, I debunk a lot of things in the book that we have grown up sort of worshiping. Remember, we're making fun of the 5 things, 10 things, all these things. think about it. When you're a kid, it's like we get taught you should want to be like a jet plane. You can fly really high. You can fly tons of people. You're really powerful. And I don't think it's right. I think that I'm teaching my students and my kids to be a helicopter. You can fly in 6 different directions. You're very agile. You have vertical lift. You don't need a long runway to take off. You don't need a long runway to land. You can land anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we think about the future of the world, you need to be agile, right? One way and one and only way ain't going to work, particularly for the younger people listening to your show. They're going to have 14 jobs.
Yeah.
And so you have to be agile. And so what does it take to be agile? I think mentally, the first thing I'm asking the readers to think about is do not want to be an airplane. Be a helicopter.
There you go. You can fly all sorts of different ways. You just don't have to go straight.
That's right. And you don't need a long runway. You got to be able to shift. And then when you feel like you're about to crash, you got to be able to land.
Mm-hmm. And one thing you talk about, though, is a helicopter is harder to fly than a plane. I mean, you've got the yaw and the, I can't remember all the different terms, but, you know, if you don't do things right, that thing will spin out on you or, you know, all sorts of bad things can happen. You have to balance it pretty well.
Totally. I mean, I think that the way helicopter pilots, I'm about to take lessons, by the way, my helicopter friends, they say that hovering a helicopter, which is the hardest maneuver, it's like balancing a marble on a sheet of glass.
Wow.
That's the sort of feeling of balance that a helicopter pilot has. So, yeah, I mean, here's your choice, right? So you can either sort of say, it is a true statement, helicopters do crash more and they are more costly to maintain. Mm. So you can decide that because of that, you can say, oh, I don't want to be able to fly my own helicopter. I'd rather ride in someone else's plane. Mm-hmm. And to me, after 53 years of living and particularly where the world is going, I think I would rather fly my own aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I mean, you know, you can make sure that the bolts and doors are attached.
Close the door. Yeah. Don't fall off. Put on your seatbelt. Don't fall off.
Evidently, if you fly with Boeing lately, you have to bring your own bolts and nuts. And they're actually giving discounts to people that fly with, I think it's United, where if you hold the door closed the whole time during the flight, they'll give you a discount.
BYOP, like bring your own parachute.
Yeah. I a couple weeks ago, I took Dolly from ChatGPT's service, and I had to make a whole mess of pictures of like people flying in planes with bolts and parts. You know, all around stuff. It's quite. I had to make about 10 different photos, the drawings, and it was quite amazing what it came up with. But yeah, there's flight travel.
By the way, that's an ox, isn't it? It's an impossible. It's like the Sphinx. If you have to bring your own bolts and stuff, how do you get through security? Don't you set off the alarms?
Pretty much. The IKEA evidently is making it so that you can build your own plane now too, as well. So they've got that going on. And you know, I think if everyone just chips in and brings a few bolts, I think, you know, we'll be okay as long as, you know, the door doesn't completely fly off.
Or it could be like the movie Up, you know, like you just buy 500 helium balloons and stuff. And
that's
you just
probably float. The future of air travel at this pace. So,
totally.
So stick to helicopters, folks, and anything that isn't made by Boeing at this pace. There you go. In the short term. People 10 years from now are listening to this podcast going, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, these guys. These guys.
Which is what they do. I mean, there's episodes that are 15 years old on our show that people are just like, what the fuck is going on? Google it, folks. You'll know what was going on in 2024. There you go. Helicopter can hover in windless conditions. The sum of the weight and drag forces equal the sum of the thrust and lift forces.
Yeah.
So as you play that with the balance and stuff, I like the agility that you're trying to teach people to do, because that's really, you know, what I saw when I was growing up is learning to think out of the box, learning to take a look at what was coming at me from society or what people wanted to influence me, or, you know, what do? You go to high school and get good grades. What do you do after that? You go to college and get good grades. What do you do after that? You go get married. What do after that? Yeah, you have kids and then you get a job and you're just like, what do I do after that? And somewhere in there, there's the assumption that if you do all those things that society or, you know, what everyone tells you is the norms, that somehow you're going to find happiness in there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get, you know, to midlife crisis stage and go, is this all there is? Like, this, I'm still not happy.
I know. I mean, it's, there is no formula. We get taught that it's helpful. There's certain things that are helpful to know. And in the end of the day, you gotta fly your own helicopter. And sometimes you do crash. And sometimes other people fly higher, and that's all right. Like, yeah. It's, you know, I like to quote Frank Drummond during these types, you know, Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Our life may not amount to a hill of beans, but this is our hill, and these are our beans. Like,
well, there's some reality in there, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the end of the movie. I don't know if you remember that end of the movie when Priscilla Presley sort of like become like a captured robot and she's about to kill the queen.
It's the baseball one where OJ's in it and stuff.
Oh yeah, you gotta. Yeah. I showed my kids it the other day. And most of the stuff I show them, I force them to watch like the '80s stuff, and they're like, "Dad, what? We can't watch this." That movie they loved.
Oh well, that's good. That's good. I remember watching it when OJ was in jail. I'm like, "How do you get out?" But no, it's funny. I remember, you know, you probably grew up in the same year I did when he played football, and then when he would jump the luggage.
Yeah, that hurts.
In the airports.
Yeah, hurts Uncle Buck.
He jumped the luggage. And it was like, I don't know. For some reason, it was cool. I don't know why. He'd run through the airport and jump the luggage.
I wonder why it's so hard to find those ads now. I wonder why hurts.
I wonder why. Why'd they kill him? Anyway, that's a really bad dark joke. So there you go. He was chasing somebody's waiter. What haven't we touched on that you want to tease out in the book to entice people to pick it up?
I don't know. I think it's a book. It's going to make you laugh. You will cry, and you'll learn. I mean, and it's not in a showy way. I mean, I think that the best thing to think about it is like for those of you who love music, mm-hmm. it literally is written like it's an anthem. It's like a Springsteen anthem. It's like a Born to Run anthem. In 2024, that was what was in my head while I was writing the book. Mm-hmm. You don't like Springsteen?
I love Springsteen. Yeah. I love Springsteen, but whatever that chord was you hit, that didn't sound very Born to Run-ish. Is that the right chord for Born to Run? You were Born to Run. Anyway, I noticed that you know there's references to the Stairway to Heaven in the book.
Yeah.
I think I just saw a reference to it got away from me. But so you talked through some of your music influences there. It sounds like that plays a little bit into it.
It's all woven in. I mean, like the cool thing about Stairway, which was really important, it's a for a different reason it's important in the book because it was a gift I gave my brother. I gave him Zeppelin 4.
Oh, wow.
And I saved up my money the entire year when I was like 8 to afford to give it to him. But I don't want to – that's a very emotional part of the book. But – it's the actual song was the book takes some inspiration from the structure. Like that song's famous because first of all, people didn't think it was going to be successful because it was too long.
Yeah.
And there are three tempo changes, which my book has too. Mm-hmm. But in the first, when Stairway starts off, there's no percussion, there's no drum.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few songs that I think they set the percussion like 2.5-3 minutes in.
Yeah,
which I think getting back to what you like about the helicopter and hovering, I think a lot of people, like here's a little life advice, they try to set the drums too early or they're listening to someone else's drums. And sometimes you just got to chill, not decide. The world's telling you to do all these things and you just have to sort of listen and say, okay, I got it, and not do anything. And then do something. And so that hovering period, to me, musically, it's analogous to not setting drums. Mm. Right? There's no beat that you have to do something. It's like, just let it be for a bit.
Just let it be. A lot of the great music was set that way. You know, Stairway to Heaven, of course, Hotel California. You know, radio stations were like, this isn't radio. This is a 7-minute opus or whatever. And this is never going to fly. And yet, I think both those songs are two of the greatest songs ever.
Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, Rhapsody, same thing. Like people were like, you can't release a song like that. And they said, well, we're going to. Yeah.
I'm a Rush fan. They're known for making just old sides of an album. And you're just like, can you guys calm down and cut this up a little bit? like your Coke. Don't know what that
is. You know, that was the maybe that Moving Pictures album was one of my favorite. I still have it in the basement. I've kept it.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you did you watch the Geddy Lee interview?
Oh, which one?
The one that he did before he knew that was it Neil Peart that Neil passed Peart. Away?
Peart, yeah.
He passed away, right? So Geddy knew that he was dying or had died during the interview. And so if you I'll send you the link after. And
he knew that he passed during the
interview? Or he was dying, like he was close to dying.
Yeah.
And no one knew while he was being interviewed.
Yeah, because he kept it pretty quiet. Him and Alex, why Neil wanted it. Neil was very private. Yeah. But yeah, early 2020. But yeah, I'd be interested to see which interview that was at the time. It was a shock. It came during COVID, which was like a double punch to my gut when he passed. But yeah, they would do these huge long opuses in their early years, and just holy shit, this is a long ass song. But keep that album because that's probably worth some money. That original Moving Pictures and stuff.
Yeah, look, it's one of these albums. You think that they're not going to be a great live band, that they sound so good. It's a studio band, but they were incredible live. Yeah.
And it's many times in the early days when you know they hadn't mastered well the albums. Most people didn't realize that back in the day they have to really fuck up stuff to be able to get onto vinyl. And remaster stuff. And then it's even worse because when they made the CDs, they used the vinyl imprints, which sounds awful on CD. And that's why they had to go back and remaster all the CDs and make them so that they would, you know, be utilizing the technology of the CD. And so it took a while for a lot of albums. And then a lot of them were just poorly produced and poorly mastered. And they sounded kind of good on vinyl, but they really came out shitty once it went to technology. And I noticed it, you know, bad engineering when we were, well, I don't think it was in engineering. I think it was in the mastering or it was in something in the production, but they went back and cleaned a lot of that up. And a lot of those early albums, whether it was for Rush or other bands from the 70s, and they just really made them a difference. And so I'm glad you incorporated that into the book because music is kind of the pathway to life or the representation of life or
it is.
I'm not sure what I'm trying to say. Art.
It reconciles kindness and math. That's how it's music is a language of humanity. I mean, for your listeners too, at redhelicopter.com, there's original music arranged that for this book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm composing right now a rock anthem for this book. And the plan is to adapting this into writing a rock opera.
There you go. Maybe put it on Broadway. I think Tommy's on Broadway right now.
Is it? I haven't seen
the
it.
The Who?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But.
Yeah. And, you know, that was such a huge rock opera. Holy crap. And, of course.
Like Hamilton. Hamilton's a rock opera, right? I mean, it's. Yeah, so like the book is written. All right, I'm going to go there because you love music. So it's the book is written. I talk a lot about counterpoint, which is you know for you non-musicians out there, it's you know when you were little and you used to sing row 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 your boat in rounds, and so it's when you have two melodies. So usually in a piano, it's your right hand and your left hand play. There's no harmony. Both play a melody, so they would sound good independently. Mm-hmm. But together, when you play both melodies together, there's a third emergent melody. And I write a lot about that. The book is structured in counterpoint and like it's meant to sort of be a metaphor for like being a good friend to someone. You know, it's, hey, Chris, sing your song, dude. And then I'll sing mine. And like
we'll make
friendship. Harmonies. Yeah, friendship is what results. I'm not asking you to change who Chris is to be my friend.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sing your melody. I got it. And then I'm going to sing mine. And I think it's just for me after 53 years, I'm like, oh my gosh, like my best friends, best friendships, you know, like I think the way that I ran that company, I know the way I ran that company, it was in counterpoint. I didn't ask people to be me, change themselves. I'm like, you're good. And
That's a good analogy. Some people that are leaders, and I may have been guilty of that in my early years, of trying to make people, maybe either my culture or my people around me, like me, the same sort of things. And then you had to realize that you weren't the purveyor of all the greatest ideas in the world, and you needed everyone else to have those differences and those yin and yangs, because the great ideas can come from anywhere. And their life journey is different than yours, so they can contribute something sometimes from a different perspective or angle that you don't see. That, or they're just stupid sometimes. But there's most people. Like,
anyway. And then those guys, they should read the top five list that we don't read.
Yeah.
Like, do these five things.
How not to suck.
Yeah, suck less.
Suck less. That's like a P. Diddy part. I don't know what that means. What do you want people that read your book to come away with, and what do you want their experience to be, or their thoughts to be, when they come away with your book?
Well, I think that this is a serious question, Chris. You shifted right from P. Diddy to serious questions.
Sorry, we do that on the show. We throw them at you. Keep you dancing.
You know, I think it's reminding. I timed this book, part by accident, part intentionally, that it's coming out in 2024. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I've lived a life, you know, I think I confessed, I was on Brene Brown's podcast. I said to her, I was like, I'm a hot mess. You know, like I got friends that look so different. I got athlete friends, musician friends. Like I don't know. I chair entrepreneurship at Howard, which is a really important historically black university. I'm this Korean guy. And then I also teach at MIT. I'm like, it doesn't matter for me. It's just like, mm-hmm. I find a way to get along with people, and we connect at kindness and math and music. And so I want people to sort of read the book and like sort of just be reminded of this, actually, and mm-hmm. say, you know what, go hug your mom, take your dog for a walk. You're not as bad as you think you are, you know, because people are told they suck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm tired of people being told they suck, actually. Yeah. Stop doing that, because we know
people who suck.
You know, yeah, they suck. And we know why they do it, because telling people they suck, this whole FOMO thing, you know, then people like spend money. Mm-hmm. And I better spend money, because then I'll suck less. And I'm like, don't spend the money. Invest it in the S&P 500. Mm. And why don't you retire earlier?
There you go. That's what my landing page says. People go to it and it says, you suck. Give me your money. I'll make it so that you don't suck as much.
And here are the seven.
Here's the credit card thing.
To suck less, please do this. And here are five convenient payment methodologies.
I'm never going to be able to look at Tony Robbins the same ever again after this. There you go. I love Tony Robbins.
It's a different approach, right? Like, I think, you know, here's the random, you're going to love this because you watched this movie. I know you love this. Have you seen Dodgeball?
Yeah. What a great movie that was.
Yeah. You know, like the Average Joe's gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of sort of like, hey, you want to come to the gym? You want to sort of like meet some friends and learn a few things in seriousness, but have fun while learning some things rather than it being life and death. Yeah, then come here. And I think the book does do that. There's a lot of serious stuff in there, right? It's like stuff that I think that every high school kid at a minimum should be learning, and we're not teaching them. This is the high school teacher in me. So I'm teaching everyone everything I've learned in 25, 30 years of being in private equity, law school, running a company, entrepreneur, founder. They're getting all of it. But it tastes good. It's like they're eating like chicken noodle soup. And while they're eating, I'm like, do you know that the formula for discounted cash flows and IRRs? Here, learn this. Okay, not good. Now put the spoon down. Let's keep talking.
There you go. Oh, well, give us your final thoughts as we go out. Tell people where they can pick up the book and .coms to check it out.
Yeah, redhelicopter.com is where you don't have to suck and come visit. We welcome all flyers. You have everything there. Like, you can sort of see the background to the book, like the TED Talk and all these things. You'll see it there. And then there are links to the book. There's a bunch of original music as well. There's a Spotify playlist as well. Oh, wow. And I hope you enjoy it. I mean, there's a book tour that's pre-launched already. It's launching next week. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Boston Globe just did a piece. My hometown paper just did a piece on the book, which was really nice of them. That just came out. And I hope to see you on tour, because I'm bringing, when I can do this without, if I'm allowed to, because I have to now carry nuts and bolts, because I'm going to say Chris Voss can't really do it. But I'm bringing my guitar, you know, and it's sort of just, it's meant to be pretty festive.
There you go. Just pack a parachute too if you're flying United or Spirit Airlines. You get the discount over there. But I don't think Spirit's had anything fall out of the sky. I think it's mostly been United and just anything Boeing, I guess, is whatever. In fact, that there's a rumored joke going around that ship that crashed into the Francis Key Scott Bridge was carrying Boeing parts. It's a horrible joke. Yeah.
Yeah,
but what can you do? That's the thing of life. So thank you very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it and sharing your infinite knowledge there, James. We got the .coms. Thank you very much for coming on. Thanks so much for tuning in. Go to goodreads.com/ChrisVoss, linkedin.com/ChrisVoss, ChrisVoss1, the TikTok, all those crazy places. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe, and we'll see you guys next time. And I should have